Jimmy Muyaha is leading the conversation all across South Africa right now. Stay tuned to SAFM.
Thank you very much to Greg for that news update. There'll be more news with Greg at 7 o'clock. You're tuned into the SFM Market Update with MoneyWeb. I'm your host, Jimmy Moyaha, and on the show today, we're going to be taking a look at results from PPC Africa as well as Invicta Holdings. Both companies gave us interim results for the 6 months ended their respective six-month periods. We're going to take a look at those numbers with the respective CEOs and get a sense of the performances of those businesses. We'll also have a conversation with the team at 91, taking a look at the trade-offs between fixed income and cash at this time. We know we got an interest rate cut last week. It's made us rethink how we're approaching our investment decisions from a cash perspective and whether or not there might be value in not sitting on cash at this time. And then because it's Monday, we've got a personal finance conversation to have as well. We're going to be taking a look at understanding your borrowings and spend over this festive period and making some responsible decisions and not getting into unnecessary debts.
SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
We kick off the show, as we always do, with a sense of market movements throughout the day. I'm joined on the line by Director and Portfolio Manager at Rand Swiss, Gary Boyson, to take a look at market movements and what we make of them. Gary, lovely to have you on the show as always. Thanks so much for taking the time. It seems as though markets are still going through a bit of choppiness and a bit of volatility. Last week, we did see some really good movements on the markets, and then Friday came and we saw such a massive sell-off. How did we start off this week?
I started off a lot more positively, and but as you say, volatility is still elevated. So we've obviously got a measure of volatility if we look at something like the VIX, so the volatility index. The price of volatility has dropped 10% today, but we're still trading at around 21 on the VIX, and that's pretty high. So I don't think we're quite out of the woods yet, but we are getting a little bit of a rebound. So if I look at the S&P 500 at the moment, up 1.3%, NASDAQ having a massive day up, well over 2% up at the moment. But a lot of that is just recovery from the nerves that I think we've seen creeping into offshore markets, specifically around, all this talk of an AI bubble. On the local market, offshore share index, reasonable performance, up about a third of 1%. That was driven higher by the resources. So we have got gold running a little bit at the moment. So that's obviously helping our gold miners, as well as our other precious metal miners. So we had the likes of Valterra up almost 5%. Sibanye-Stillwater also called 4.2% up. Harmony Implats, they really were leading the upside. Industrials felt a little bit of pressure because we had results out of Naspers today, obviously the Naspers process pair. That slipped slightly. So process was down almost 2%. Naspers faring a little bit better, only down around 0.5%, or just under 0.5% at least. But that dragged the industrial index down 0.6%. Financials also not a great day for financials, a little bit of a mixed bag, but the sub-index managed to finish about a quarter of 1% lower. The local currency against the US dollar is still a little bit weaker. So we're trading, call it 17.30 at the moment, which is off those kind of very strong levels around 17. And the story there has actually come from dollar strength. So for the first time in a long time, we've got the dollar index, which measures the US dollar against six of its major trading partners, above 100. So we're seeing a little bit of a rally in the US dollar, which is strange as well, since we've also seen an increased likelihood of a rate cut come the 10th of December. But I suppose we'll take it for what it is. And it is a strange week, though, Jimmy. I've got to be honest, because we had the Japanese markets closed. We're expecting, obviously, the Thanksgiving and Black Friday holidays in the US as well. So maybe some stranger moves over the next couple of days, just with slightly lighter volumes.
It certainly is a shorter week with that Thanksgiving and Black Friday closure from the US's perspective. Gary, what are markets weighing up at the moment? And perhaps what you're thinking about as asset managers, understanding that we're at the end of the year. We've spoken about the fact that we usually have that Santa rally, but markets are behaving differently. They've been behaving differently the entire year. What still has markets uncertain or spooked? You touched on an AI bubble, but I can imagine it's not limited to just that.
Yeah, it's difficult because I think we've had a massive year. It has been an incredibly interesting year, and it's something that we chatted around with clients at the opening of the year, saying that, you know, following those elections, the U.S. elections, November last year, the U.S. markets were almost priced for perfection. Everyone was incredibly excited about the market-friendly Republicans coming in, you know, all the deregulation that was going to come out of the Trump administration. We had the dollar index way up, and what has transpired is I suppose, you know, the old adage, if it's in the press, it's in the price. And what we saw was almost the reverse. And the U.S. indices have actually underperformed, you know, just about all of the emerging market indices. So, I mean, Europe is one of the best performers. I mean, South Africa has had an incredible year. You know, the dollar has weakened significantly. I mean, we've had obviously the big run in the gold price. So I think coming to the end of the year, a lot of asset managers, specifically, you know, I suppose domestic asset managers, are probably looking at this and saying, well, we've had a massive up year. It's been really good. Maybe take a little bit of profits. You know, and I think, you know, you obviously, you know, I kind of alluded to it. You touched on it as well. I mean, the concerns around the AI bubble, I think that is a real worry for stocks at the moment, or at least for market participants at the moment. And when I say it's a worry, it's that's how the market is behaving. They're looking at some of the price gains that we've seen in you know, the typical AI stocks, the likes of Palantir, Nvidia, Intel, AMD, you know, some of the hyperscalers as well. And they're looking at this and just saying, this doesn't seem like it should be possible. But obviously, looking at Nvidia's results last week, you know, they're good. They're really, really good. And you know, as much as everyone's looking at these exaggerated PEs, the growth that is coming out of these stocks is unbelievable. And I think the concern at this stage is, I mean, there's no question in my mind anyway, that it's very different market mechanics from something like the dot-com crisis that we saw. It's a little bit different, but in the thing that people are worried about is just the scale of these data center builds and the amounts of money that are being spent, and whether or not that will eventually justify profitability. But for a company like Nvidia that is actually selling chips, I mean, these are real numbers. so it's a difficult one. And yeah, I think at this stage, I mean, obviously we have an AI portfolio that we run for clients, and I was the seed investor in it. I'm still invested, and I look at this as long as it's a correct allocation in your portfolio. If you are holding the AI type theme, you know, there's something called the Gartner hype cycle, and I mean, anyone that wants to Google that should. You know, it's very difficult to tell when you're in that, you know, that this disruptive technology has come in and you're in that upswing. We kind of know at some point it's going to fall back, the same as Amazon would have fallen back from, you know, above $100 a share in the dot-com crisis, in the dot-com times, to, which I think was about $6 a share. But over the long run, these companies do generate material value. So it's I suppose, trying to determine where we are in that cycle. And for now, I think, yeah, a lot of people are getting shaken out. But again, NASDAQ up 2.2% today. So, you know, everyone that was panicking last week is maybe starting to regret their decisions this week.
Gary, we'll come back to just how you approach markets and going into the new year. I want to get a sense of some of the movements that have been happening throughout the day. You touched on this earlier, Naspers giving us an update on performance and numbers from that perspective alongside Prosus. What stood out for you within those numbers?
Yeah, also very, very strong. Yeah, very strong numbers. And you look at the growth that these companies are achieving, and it is pretty spectacular. So, obviously, you know, Naspers, you know, announced at their capital markets day in June that they plan to double e-commerce revenue and triple its EBITDA in the next 3 years, which was a pretty bold statement. But today, reaffirming that guidance, you know, saying e-commerce revenue is on track for, you know, it's between 7.3 and 7.5 billion US dollars, just enormous numbers. You know, we can see there's a strong growth trajectory here, you know, specifically OLX, you know, iFoods, UPay. So iFoods revenue up 35%. That's really the Latin American food delivery business. OLX in Europe also doing well, although that's up about 17% in revenue terms. I mean, that there is actually OLX Brazil as well and a few other places. PayU, which is obviously in India, also 17% up, also looking pretty solid. So year-on-year profit growth in e-commerce up 70%, unbelievably strong. Nasdaq and Prosus often don't get, kind of labeled as necessarily AI stock, an AI stock. Anyway, but I mean, also, top of the results presentation, kind of just highlighting that, to service this e-commerce business, they are now running 20,000 AI agents to throughout the group. So it's something that they are focusing on and want to become Europe's leading AI lab. But strong set of results. I don't think, I want to say that the market maybe was pricing it a little bit aggressively, but to see why it was down 0.5%, I mean, that could just be a little bit of volatility coming out of Asia and Tencent this morning as well.
Gary, let's wrap things up with a look at the latest settlement announced by the Stefanity business with Eskom. They settled for some 500 plus million rands after a 5-year legal battle. Your thoughts around that and perhaps what it does for their balance sheet now that that is out of the way?
Oh, it's dramatically going to improve them. So 580 million is significant for Steph stocks. I mean, consider their market cap is 876 million as of close today. They've got about just over 1.2 billion in debt. So, they have committed to pay 80% of this back to their Standard Bank facility. I think it's before February next year. Eskom should pay them the total amount before the 12th of December. So that cash they'll be receiving that cash shortly. It's not the 685 million expat that they were hoping for, but I think this is the nature of the construction sector. It's the nature of contracting. Eskom had a delay damages claim, claiming that they had already overpaid for work and there should have been penalties. I think it really is the nature of construction and contracting where many projects end in dispute, and Stefstock has a reputation for being a particularly tough negotiators. So while it's not quite, it's just over 100 million lighter than they were expecting, or at least hoping for, I think it's a good settlement, and hopefully they can move on to better things. Overall, I mean, the market participants liked it. It's not a particularly liquid stock, but up 3.6% on the day, so we'll take it.
We take the wins where we can and try and make sense of the volatility where we can't. But what we will not do is anticipate what we think will happen in the markets, because that's not the best way to approach it. For now, we'll leave this conversation on that note. Thanks so much to the Director and Portfolio Manager at RandSwift, Gary Boyson, for joining us to take a look at market movements, helping us make sense of what might be driving some market sentiment.
My boy, a father now. Another generation on this farm. Maybe we should expand.
We could leverage the farm.
Add a residential estate. It'll pay itself off easily. So they'll be cared for, even when you're gone. If it's on your mind, it's on ours. Partner with a wealth banker who will connect you to structured lending solutions for wealth that supports generations to come. See money differently. Nedbank Private Wealth. We're a licensed FSP and registered credit provider. T's and C's apply.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
PPC Africa rather gave us an update on their first 6 months of the new financial year. A stronger start to the year, some double-digit growth in certain areas, a single-digit growth in revenues, but the business is on solid footing. We're going to be taking a look at these in a bit more detail with the company's Chief Executive Officer, Matthias Cardarelli. He joins me on the line now to see what we make of the performance. Matthias, lovely to have you back on the show. Thanks so much for taking the time. We caught up at the end of last year and it was a strong year. How has the new year kicked off?
Good afternoon, Jimmy. Thank you very much for having me again and for giving me the platform, the chance to share again a very strong results coming in the first half of this year. As you probably have seen, our EBITDA has increased by 23.5%. Our EBITDA margin increased by 2.6 percentage point. Our net cash flow increased also 32%, the ROIC 6.3 percentage point to 13.4, so really the turnaround looking good.
Now, Matthias, you and I have spoken about this turnaround strategy that PPC has dubbed the Awaken the Giant turnaround strategy, and many might not remember this and might not remember the giant reference, because at one stage PPC was an immense immensely sized company with quite the footprint. Take me through what the business looks like at the moment, how each of the business segments are performing. We know the South African business has been on the road to recovery as well as the Zimbabwean cement business, but just take me through how your different portfolios are performing at the moment.
Yeah, let's start from South Africa Cement. Again, we have had a very good starting point of the year. The first half EBITDA growth 30% in South Africa Cement, and we reached an EBITDA margin of 17.1%. I think that PPC has not seen that EBITDA margin in their cement business in South Africa probably for more than 10, 15 years. We are seeing how we were able to achieve that in South Africa. Well, the turnaround in terms of efficiency, operational efficiency, and savings in our logistic function is bringing a lot of results, a lot of savings. In the first year, we were able to reduce our logistic cost per ton per kilometer by 14%. And just in the first half of this fiscal year, we reduced our cost another 13%. In terms of operation, we are driving our plants more efficiently. We are producing more clinker. We are producing more cement. We are improving our OEE in our clinker kiln. It is the metric to evaluate the performance in the kilns, and also we are reducing our clinker factor, which also brings savings and reduce our CO2 emissions. On the commercial side, we continue looking to not to sell at all cost, not to look for market share at all cost, but just to sell through the appropriate channels to the right customers and the right product. And this has pushed our contribution margin significantly. So the combination, generally speaking, of all of that is what has pushed EBITDA and EBITDA margin high.
Matthias, let's take a look at the demand side. Let's stick with the commercial conversation. How are you seeing the demand side of the market? Markets have been depressed in the construction space for the longest time, and I know that from conversations you and I have had, that's a critical area of the market that needs to kind of do its part for you to continue to grow and continue with the turnaround plan. How are you seeing the demand side in the areas you're operating?
Yeah, Jimmy, allow me to mention that all our turnaround plan and the guidance we have given to the market is not based on any improvement in the macroeconomics or the market. But I'm not going to escape from your question. Talking about the market itself, the construction market, we are starting to see some pockets of growth, especially in the Western Cape, Mpumalanga, and Limpopo. We see some public works, especially in the roads by SANRAL, coming, and this is bringing some opportunities for us. But we also seen something coming from the private sector, especially in the residence segment. So still too soon to say, but we are starting to see some things that make us believe that probably finally, after a very long negative cycle, we are starting to turn.
Matthias, let's take a look at the side of the business that you can control. You've mentioned serious cost-cutting measures, and that's done well for the business. How does that then inform the strategy going into the next 6 months and perhaps beyond the next 6 months? Is the business kind of sitting there saying, look, these are the things we know we have control over, and like you said, the demand side, you have nothing you can do about there. So to focus on that would just be perhaps a wasted time and wasted effort. Are there other areas where you might be saying, this is our strength, this is what we're doing, or perhaps this is what's worrying us at the moment about the things we can control?
Oh, spot it on. I mean, our performance, you know, we started last year an improvement performance plan where we are looking at 3 years to improve our performance in the plants. We are only in the first year, so we are pretty sure that we are going to bring a lot of efficiencies in the next couple of years. On top of that, we built two solar plants in our main cement plant, integrated cement plant in Slurry and Dwaalboom, that they are going to be able to produce soon 10 megawatts, which represent 30% of the needs in terms of electricity for those plants. That is also going to bring a lot of savings moving forward. On the logistics side, although, as I mentioned to you, we have already got a lot of savings from running our logistic function better. Next year, we have a big opportunity because we are going to renegotiate all our contracts with the logistics suppliers. So we are expecting a lot of savings from that as well. Overall, we are continue looking for opportunities reducing clinker factor by extenders, which again push our variable costs down. And of course, we talked the previous time we talked about the new plant in the Western Cape. The project is on time, on budget, and we are planning to run that plant in the first quarter of calendar year 2027. That is going to be a game changer, not only for PPC, but also for the cement industry in South Africa.
Mentez, before I let you go, I want to get your thoughts around capital allocation. Understandably, in a time like this, when a business is focusing on strategic growth and measured growth, capital allocation becomes ever so critical. You don't want to be seen to not be exercising discipline when looking at that, but you also don't want to miss out on opportunities that might present themselves. How are you looking at your capital allocation at this point?
Well, we have a very strict capital allocation. We have a budget, a CapEx plan that we stick to it. And the only important investment that we have put in place has been the Western Cape plant. That I'm saying that is going to be a game changer. It's going to bring a lot of savings, 30% reduction in variable costs, 30% reduction on fixed costs. We are going to run in the Western Cape only one plant instead of two plants and two quarries. So it's going to be so many benefits and profit to PPC that I can confidently say that our capital allocation strategy and policies remain very strict.
A business focused on implementing its turnaround strategy and maximizing on that strategy. All the best to you and the team, Matthias. We'll look forward to catching up at the end of the year. As Chief Executive Officer at PPC Africa, Matthias Cardarelli joining us to take a look at the performance over the first 6 months of the year ended September 2025 and what the business is focused on.
Here's the thing about running a business. It needs constant connection with reliable communication between you, your staff, and customers. That's why the right partnership matters. Get Cloud PABX from Telkom Business, a unified communication solution that makes connecting easy from just 161 rands per month.
This summer, your business deserves the best. Visit telkom.co.za/business for deals that keep your business online all the time. T's and C's apply. Telkom Business. Possible begins here.
SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
Another company that provided us with an update on the performance of their business over the first 6 months ended September 2025 today was Invicta Holdings. The revenues of the business up 6%, profits for the period down around 11%. But we're going to be taking a look at these in a bit more detail with the Chief Executive Officer at Invicta, Stephen Joffe, joins me on the line now to see what we make of the performance. Stephen, always lovely having you on the show, always lovely catching up. When we spoke last at the end of the previous financial year, it was a good solid year for the business. How has the new year kicked off?
Yeah, good evening to you. I think we've delivered another robust performance with revenue up 6%, as you mentioned, with very strong cash generation. We maintained our gross margin at 32%, and we improved our HEPS by 15% and our sustainable HEPS by 19% on the comparative period. We continue to execute on our strategy of global diversification and disciplined investment. And we made an acquisition in the UK on 1 September. And we bought back about 3 million shares, ordinary shares, during the period. And all that during a very tough industrial period. But our businesses remain resilient. And we're seeing encouraging activity levels, especially in the mining sector.
Stephen, you touched on the cash generative nature of the business at the moment. Take me through the importance of that when looking at a business as diversified as Invicta. You've got quite a few holdings across quite a few assets in various areas around the world, like you mentioned, and we'll get to the acquisitions in a second, but take me through the importance of being cash generative in a market that might be challenging or more challenging than what it has been.
When you run a business like ours, it's very working capital intensive. So it's always a balance of how much inventory you hold and how you allow your customers to be financed. And it's always that balance that's so critically important. Now, with regard to stock, you have to look at logistical challenges throughout the world. And you've got to ensure that you have sufficient stock to make sure your customers can rely on you, that you won't be running out of stock at critical times. And that's always the balance that you have to make. And we've always erred on the side of caution to make sure that we don't run out of inventory. And in that environment, I'm very pleased that we're able to generate the cash that we did.
Stephen, let's take a look at the contributors towards revenue. I mean, each of the different portfolios adding quite a bit to the RPE business, the KAG business. I want to get a sense of just, it seems as though you've struck this unique balance of being able to get your businesses to contribute almost in equal parts towards the revenue. And that kind of diversification does have strategic benefits when some portfolio assets might be having a bit of a down cycle.
It really does, because invariably nothing always goes right or wrong together. And because of our diverse portfolio, we typically find that some areas are performing and some areas are underperforming. But as a portfolio, and through our geographical diversity as well, we find that we're able to deliver decent results to our shareholders or for our shareholders.
Stephen, what is you worried for the shareholder at the moment? I mean, some of the things like macroeconomic conditions would have everybody worried, and they have had everybody worried for quite some time. What has you worried at the moment, perhaps not specific to your business, but maybe specific to the areas you're in?
I think for us, the biggest concern over the while, and you might laugh as well, like, why is a South African saying that? But it's actually been the American tariffs. As you know, we have our factory in China. We've also opened a second factory in Japan. But the tariffs going up and down creates a lot of uncertainty for us, and we're not able to properly invest in the Japanese facility until we have certainty of what the ultimate tariffs will be. So for us, we would just like certainty of what those tariffs are, that we can properly align our business with the new environment.
Stephen, what measures are you putting in place around those tariffs? Because if a business like yours doesn't achieve that certainty, it's not as though you have the luxury of just saying, oh, well, we're going to sit on the sidelines and wait until then. Surely there's a strategy to say, in the event that this doesn't go as planned, we have to keep moving.
Yeah, so that's precisely what we did in building out our factory in Japan. Japan currently has a 15% tariff into the United States. And because we're importing a steel product, there's an additional steel tariff as well. That compares quite favorably right now to the 45% tariff, which is levied from China. So at the moment, we are building more and more products in our Japanese facility. But what we want to get is to a point of certainty, because if the ultimate tariff in China is, let's say, 30% and Japan remains at 15%, we might well be better off continuing with production in China.
Stephen, let's look at that acquisition. Spalding Holdings in the UK, interesting acquisition. I know you and I would have touched on just what you were looking at going into this new financial year, and we did discuss not being afraid to get these acquisitions done. What is this going to do for the business? How does this position, or how does the business now fit into the existing portfolio, and does it enhance a certain area that you guys want to focus on, perhaps?
Yeah, so as you know, Invicta used to be a big distributor of capital equipment in South Africa when we represented C&H. We sold that back to the OEM about 4 years ago. We waited out our restraint period, and we've been looking since then to get back into agriculture. It's a space we understand, and it's a space we like. We found this acquisition in the United Kingdom. It's a prominent distributor of agricultural and ground care components. It's known for an extensive range of high quality replacement parts and machinery, and it has a 70 year track record of innovation, quality, and strong customer support. It's run by a very, very effective management team, and it's like a perfect fit for the Invicta portfolio of businesses. So we're very pleased with this acquisition.
Speaking of perfect fits, how do you then look at perhaps other investable opportunities? I bring this up because I recently saw a conversation around the UK market and whether or not that market is currently investable from a returns profile. And given that this is a UK acquisition, how is the business assessing what fits into our portfolio? And is that kind of a bigger priority than perhaps saying, oh, there's a good business that we can acquire at a really good price? Is it more around making sure that it is portfolio fit and you're able to add value to it?
For us, firstly, it could be like that. And secondly, and importantly, I contrast that to some of our businesses in South Africa. When we make an acquisition in a place like the UK, it's relatively a tiny acquisition with regard to the scale of the UK. And even if the UK has very poor growth, that doesn't mean that we have to have poor growth because our base is so small. So we just focus on building our businesses in these big economies. And because we're so little, I think we can do really, really well just focusing on our business.
Stephen, you touched on the share buyback that also took place in the previous financial year. Can we take a look at that and perhaps how that fits into the strategy from a business perspective? It is difficult in this day and age to be able to unlock value, especially in companies that I suppose in Invictus case might be considered holding companies to a certain extent because of the diversification of your portfolio. How do you then start to say, okay, this is what we can do from a value perspective and how we can increase the value of the business, and how does that kind of fit into, look, we have the cash, let's do it?
Yeah, you get into this invidious position of really not being so certain what to do, because to your point, as you buy back shares, clearly your liquidity is limited, and that at the same time is some of the prohibiting factors why some of the institutional shareholders aren't able to invest with you. On the other hand, as you said, you're sitting with cash, you're looking at your earnings potential, you're looking at your NAV, and you're saying, can I do better with my cash anywhere else? And often you say to yourself, you can't.
That's quite interesting. Stephen, before I let you go, does that then mean that a business like Invicta and other holding companies perhaps start to think about unbundlings differently and unlocking value differently? It might not necessarily be unbundlings. It might be perhaps diversifying how your acquisition strategy takes place going forward. Is that a conversation that even happens at a boardroom level?
I think it may happen, but I think we're going to continue with our strategy of making the right acquisitions and with disciplined capital allocations. And at the same time, with our strong cash flow, continuing with buybacks. So I hope that we can continue similarly on the path that we've been on. And hopefully it will ultimately deliver the results.
Well, we'll look forward to those results. For the moment, they are looking ever so positive, and we wish you and the team all the best, as we always do. We look forward to catching up at the end of the financial year, or if something sooner develops and you need to speak to us, we look forward to that conversation as well. For now, we'll leave this one on that note. Thanks so much to the Chief Executive Officer of Invicta Holdings, Stephen Joffe, for joining us to take a look at the performance of the business over the first 6 months and where their focus lies.
There are plenty of people who want to invest in the stock market but don't because they believe it's only for the rich. Well, now you can buy some of the best performing investments in the world even if all you have is 1 rand. That's right, 1 rand. I'm talking to Connie Bloom, CEO of a digital assets trading platform built on the blockchain, and the company's called Mesh Trade, to talk about what the future of investing looks like. And as we find out, it's definitely not just for the rich. Don't forget, join me, Kieran Ryan, weekly on the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast. Listen on moneyweb.co.za, the MoneyWeb app, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify.
MoneyWeb, your trusted source for business and investment insights.
SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
This investment feature is brought to you by 91, investing for a world of change. Speak to your financial advisor or visit 91.com to invest in your financial future. A little while ago, we took a look at actively managed ETFs and the value that they brought to investors. We're going to be taking a look at that from a slightly different perspective once again with the team at 91. We're going to be taking a look at it in the context of the midterm budget policy statement that has been tabled by National Treasury and the recent interest rate cuts, and taking a look at whether or not they still offer the amount of value that they did before. I'm joined on the line by the actively managed ETF lead at 91, Trinisha Chanka, to take a look at this and see what we make of it. Tranisha, lovely to have you on the show. Thanks so much for taking the time. I remember when I spoke to Siobhan a little while ago around actively managed ETFs and the role that they played in markets, we looked at the fact that there was a lot of diversification being offered from that perspective. Has that changed now that we have lower interest rates in the country? Are they still an attractive product?
Thanks, Jimmy. Thanks for hosting me. So absolutely. I think they're now more attractive than they were when you chatted to Siobhan, because what happens when interest rates reduce like they did last week is that the interest that you're earning on the money that's sitting in your bank account reduces immediately, right? So immediately your return that you're earning is not what it's been. And when you invest in our actively managed ETFs, which are income funds, so they are invested across a full spectrum of fixed income asset classes, what you're really getting is you're getting access to a portfolio of investments where that drop in interest rates doesn't filter through immediately. Right. So when you invested in bonds, those bonds earn an income, and the income that you're earning is locked in when you bought that bond. So when interest rates fall like they did last week, you are then still earning the higher returns that you bought the bond at. And that becomes more important because as the interest rates fall, you want to maintain the level of return you're earning, and you want to obviously sweat the cash that you're earning so that you, you keep pace with inflation and your return looks good. So on the one hand, it's when rates fall, the bond interest rates don't fall at the same time and they don't fall as quickly. On the other hand, when interest rates fall, because the bond is a longer term investment and there's an inverse relationship between interest rates and bond prices, when the rates fall, your bond price actually goes up. So you get a capital gain on your bond as well. So the income plus that capital gain means that the total return prospects for your bonds and these actively managed ETFs in particular look very good given the falls that we've just experienced.
Income is always an attractive element when thinking about investments, especially if you're able to lock in that income in the way that you are within certain bonds. But Tranisha, how does that then compare to cash? Because a lot of investors will then say, I could wait and potentially buy a bond at a cheaper rate or at a cheaper time if interest rates are going to come down, if bonds are going to get more affordable, whatever the scenario might be. Maybe I must sit on the cash a bit longer. How do you then start to deal with that trade-off between sitting on the cash and having it work for you, as you say, or having it sweat for you in products like actively managed ETFs?
Well, I think, you know, sitting on the cash, if you expect the interest rates to fall, means that you're going to be earning less and less interest as those interest rates fall, right? So that's not really a smart move, because if you expect that, you're almost locking in those lower interest rates if they come. Whereas if you then, you know, enter the bonds, you're going to be capturing that capital gain when the interest rate fall happens. If you're not in the bond when the interest rate cut actually happens, you don't experience that capital gain. So I think, you know, the time to act is now, you know, before the rate cuts come even further and before, you know, so you can enjoy that capital gain you're going to earn on the bonds. But to your point, you know, the interest rates, while we expect as inflation anchors to our new 3% target and we expect interest rate cuts will come, you know, in future, that's not guaranteed. So the budget was very positive, but it's not without risk. And therefore, it's not one or the other. You know, you shouldn't either be in cash or either be in bonds. I think what you need is you need a manager to help you, you know, be in the right asset at the right time as markets are shifting. And that's really the benefit of the active management and the benefit of what an active manager will bring, because they can navigate the shifting dynamics in the markets as they're happening.
I like that you bring up the role of the manager, because that was where I was going to go next, Tranisha, to try and get a sense of, okay, if ETFs are out there, if government retail bonds are out there, what then is the value of an actively managed ETF as opposed to a regular ETF that I can get myself? And I suppose this is where the manager or the asset manager or portfolio manager comes into play. How important is it to have that portfolio manager looking at markets and actively being in and and out of decisions on your behalf.
So, Jimmy, I mean, I think maybe let's take a walk down, you know, memory lane. So in the past, you know, actively managed ETFs are really quite a new phenomena in South Africa as well as the globe. So it's only in the last 2 to 3 years that it's become possible to launch actively managed strategies in ETF format. Historically, when you had an ETF, it had to track an index. And by design, an index is generally something that operates within a single asset class. So if you look at the fixed income asset class on the JSE, you would have really been limited to a Gavi ETF. Now, that is an ETF which tracked the government bond index, and therefore that ETF would have, by design, had to hold the different government bonds that make up the index in those various proportions. There would have been very little discretion or active management that went on, and you would have been limited to just the government bonds and what they were, right, in those proportions. Now, that government bond index would have been quite duration heavy. So there would have been some short-term bonds, some long-term bonds, and the mix of the bonds would have ended up having, you know, you'd have ended up somewhere, I would think, around 8 or 9 years as an investment term. And when interest rates change, your investment would have generally been quite volatile because you've got such a long period of time that's embedded in the bonds, right? So our actively managed ETFs, even though there's a local one and a global one, I think they operate on a very similar philosophy in that they invested across asset class. So you invested in cash, in bonds, you know, there's a bit of high quality credit. So you're not constrained to only government bonds. And therefore, you know, you definitely need an active manager to invest because by definition, an index and definitely a passive index can't really be something that's constructed across asset class. And if it is constructed across asset class, you're going to have like fixed proportions across those asset classes. Now, you need a manager to help you go between those asset classes. And then even within those asset classes, you need a manager to help you pick the right investments to be in. So as an example, our fund will have approximately, you know, half of the fund on average within, say, high quality credit instruments, but that can vary quite significantly. So it can vary by, you know, 10 to 20% at any given point in time. And we'll be, you know, deciding which asset class to be in based on the dynamics in the market. So currently, as an example, we actually overweight credit and overweight bond investments. But, you know, in the recent past, we were actually overweight cash. So I think that's some of the, you know, the considerations you need to take into account when you're picking a manager and when you're picking a solution. Because in these types of active strategies, we're able to offer solutions that give you a targeted outcome. So we want to be able to give you, you know, a return that is equal to cash plus 1.5 to 2%. And we do that by investing across these asset classes, as opposed to just sitting within one asset class and buying, you know, fixed proportions of the instruments in there. And then within each of these asset classes, there's a lot of work that goes into what we invest in. So, you know, we are doing the portfolios are made up of more than 100 instruments, and each of those instruments, you know, has significant research and due diligence that's been applied to them to make sure that we're invested in the right, you know, do we want to hold Transnet debt as an example, or do we want to hold government guaranteed Transnet debt, and at what level do we think it makes sense to hold those instruments.
Some important considerations to think about when you are looking to maximize your investments, especially at a time where markets are offering variable opportunities. It's important to weigh up your opportunity costs and make the right decisions. It's also important to have conversations with regulated financial advisors like the team at 91 and not take these conversations as financial advice. We'll leave the conversation on that note. Thanks so much to Trinisha Chanka, the actively managed ETF lead at 91, for joining us to take a look at the benefit that actively managed ETFs offer as opposed to other alternatives. This feature was brought to you by 91, investing for a world of change. Speak to your financial advisor or visit 91.com to invest in your financial future.
We can stay here, stick with what worked before, keep our eye on that one spot, steadfast. Or we can recognize that the only constant is change. At 91, we believe that with change comes opportunity. That's why we have 250 investment professionals in the world's investment hubs actively seeking opportunities for you, wherever in the world they may be. Isn't it time to change how you see investing? Invest offshore with 91. 91. Investing for a world of change. 91 is an authorized FSP.
There are plenty of people who want to invest in the stock market but don't because they believe it's only for the rich. Well, now you can buy some of the best performing investments in the world even if all you have is 1 rand. That's right, 1 rand. I'm talking to Connie Bloom, CEO of a digital assets trading platform built on the blockchain, and the company's called Mesh Trade, to talk about what the future of investing looks like. And as we find out, it's definitely not just for the rich. Don't forget, join me, Kieran Ryan, weekly on the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast. Listen on moneyweb.co.za, the MoneyWeb app, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify.
MoneyWeb, your trusted source for business and investment insights.
SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
It's personal finance time on a Monday. In this time, we're taking a look at careful festive spending and festive lending. In a time where we find ourselves wanting to give the best to our families, it's important to remember not to go into unnecessary debt for the sake of keeping up with the Joneses, so to speak. We're going to be taking a look at this in a bit more detail with the head of data science at the Metis Group. Siva Deve joins me on the line now to see how we can be more responsible this festive season. Siva, lovely to have you on the show. Thanks so much for taking the time. The festive period is often one where things like Black Friday and Christmas spending and Christmas presents become a norm in households, but it can also mean then that affordability comes into question and whether or not these items are actually necessary. How do we approach the Christmas conversation, or at least the festive conversation, from a spend perspective without going into unnecessary debts?
Thank you, Jimmy, for having me on your show today. Well, first we have to understand, why do people spend during this festive season? And there's a few reasons for that, and that would be the desire to provide the perfect gift for their family and children, competing with their friends and relatives, keeping up with the social media lifestyles, as also the Black Friday and fest promotions, which create an urgency and fear of missing out. So people think that Black Friday would be, you know, heavily discounted items, but they often confuse discounts with affordability. There's the increased use of credit cards and store accounts, and people don't often realize the impacts of the December month on the rest of the year, the next year, the January, where you trying to figure out, how do I pay for school fees? Do I have enough money for groceries? And those are the kind of things we need to start educating people around.
There certainly are a lot more emotional decisions made over the festive period. Siva, when we look at it from a lending perspective, is there data that suggests that perhaps lenders try to offer more attractive offers in this time, understanding that they get to leverage off of the emotion that people are feeling?
Yes, well, I guess with the... if you're looking at the formal sector, we do see banks, you know, offering credit card increases, sending you these SMSs saying you qualify for credit limit, and on your credit card or your overdraft facility, you have loans that you could apply for. But that's just the formal sector. Then you get the informal sector, where obviously these guys do not have that luxury of banks sending them this information, because they non-banked in some cases, or don't meet the minimum credit thresholds to qualify for credit. And this is where microlending becomes a key factor for that kind of population, is that it's easily accessible. You don't have heavy paperwork to fill in. Yeah, so that's kind of where we look at the formal versus informal, and how lenders can attract you. And often it's not necessarily just your the interest rates. You know, there could be just flexible repayment terms.
Like deferred payments. I know we see those every now and then where lenders will say, don't worry, you can pay us back at a later date, but you're still accruing interest in that time. Speaking of interest, Siva, I want to take a look at the lending over the festive period. Typically, does that come with higher interest rates, whether informal or formal lending? And what are kind of the dangers of just jumping into an interest agreement that you haven't really considered how you're going to be able to repay it for or repay it back?
So we don't often see higher interest rates. We do see a high influx of applications. And generally, interest rates or pricing, as you call it in the formal sector, would be more risk-based. So if your credit profile isn't satisfactory, you could be priced differently due to how you are. Well, you know, at Matters and our company XDS, which is a credit bureau, we look at these credit scores and we understand that lenders look at these credit scores as well. And this is how they inform how much they are willing to give somebody. Now, a credit score essentially is just an indication of how good of a payer you are. So lenders use that then to determine what kind of price they should be giving or interest rate they should be applying to this particular person. And often there are caps to the interest rate that lenders cannot go, formal lenders cannot go above. However, with the informal sector and unregistered lenders, that isn't the case.
Siva, so how then do consumers protect themselves going into the festive period? How then do consumers avoid unnecessary lending and just make smarter decisions around the borrowings that they might be looking to take on?
Consumers need to ask themselves the following questions. Am I using this credit for non-essential items, such as gifts, clothes, or vacations? Or are these items something I need to run my house, so make sure my kids are fed, make sure I'm able to get to work? So it's understanding the need versus the want. Also understanding, if I do want something, can I afford it if I were to pay cash? Lenders also need to understand the different providers out there and also should learn to shop around, not necessarily just take the first credit opportunity they get. Understand the loan terms and agreements that are put before them before signing any agreement. Make sure that, you know, that they're not borrowing from friends or family to cover these, to cover their basics before applying for credit elsewhere. And also stay within their budget, understanding how much they can afford and how much are these items really worth to them.
There you have it, folks. Be reasonable and responsible in your festive spending and festive lending so that you don't find yourself having overextended yourself going into the new financial year. We'll leave the conversation on that note. Thanks so much to Siva Deva, the head of data analytics at the Metis Group, joining us to take a look at festive lending and how to be responsible about it.
There are plenty of people who want to invest in the stock market but don't because they believe it's only for the rich. Well, now you can buy some of the best performing investments in the world, even if all you have is 1 rand. That's right, 1 rand. I'm talking to Connie Bloom, CEO of a digital assets trading platform built on the blockchain, and the company's called Mesh Trade, to talk about what the future of investing looks like. And as we find out, it's definitely not just for the rich. Don't forget, join me, Kieran Ryan, weekly on the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast. Listen on moneyweb.co.za, the MoneyWeb app, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify.
MoneyWeb, your trusted source for business and investment insights.
SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
That's the show for today, folks. Before we go, some important announcements to keep you up to date on. We typically have our shows run through to Thursday. This week's Thursday show will not be taking place because we will be taking the SAFM annual lecture in that time. There'll be a build-up towards that lecture, so you don't want to miss out on that, but it also does mean that we will forego business conversations on that day. It also means that we're going to unfortunately miss out on the CELC listing that takes place on the Thursday. We were set to catch up with CELC on that respective day around that listing. We'll keep an eye on that and see how the listing unfolds. We are expecting that the offer price would now be around the 26 R6.50 mark for those that have been keeping an eye on that. Initially, we were looking at anywhere, I think, between R29.50 and R35.50. Ahead of that listing, we've revised that number down, at least from a SLC perspective, to R26.50 or so. It's resulted in about a R3 billion valuation to the downside for that business. So one will hope to see a positive listing come Thursday. But of course, we might reflect on that on Monday when we come back from that. For now, it is coming up to 7 o'clock, which means Greg Hose and the SAFM news team are standing by to give you the latest round of news. They will, of course, be followed by Michael Abramson and the Top Sport team. From my side, we'll be back tomorrow with more business news and insights ahead of the rest of the week. But for now, good night.